Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We are at the residence of the British High Commissioner here in Jalan Langgat Golf in Ampang. Joining me is the Right Honourable Greg Hands. He is the Minister of International Trade of the UK, visiting here in Kuala Lumpur. Minister Hands, let's talk a little bit more about the bilateral trade of UK's trade and investment in Malaysia. Where do you see the sectors that might see some promise in terms of new opportunities and perhaps some challenges that might arise from seizing these kind of opportunities?
Well, we have a very good bilateral trade relationship. UK-Malaysia, about £5.6 billion last year, our second largest trade relationship in the ASEAN region. Huge potential for growth beyond that. We have so many fantastic ties between the UK and Malaysia. I would point out perhaps three or four different sectors. I think education continues to be a really big growth sector between the two countries. The whole world of tech and digital, I would say legal services, I would say sustainable development, renewable energy, these kind of things, financial services, those huge areas where we can do, where we're doing a lot already with Malaysia, we'd like to be doing a lot more.
What I find interesting when it comes to education, at least, is that Malaysians account for the second highest foreign students, tertiary level in the UK by volume. And of course, we can't beat China in terms of volume, but that speaks volumes, I guess, in terms of our interest in studying in the UK. Where do you see this growth moving forward?
Well, I think the growth could happen right the way across the board. I think there's more schools, UK universities setting up in Malaysia, the number of Malaysian students coming to the UK, as you rightly point out, the volume there remains really strong. I think we need to keep nurturing that, make sure that the UK government provides as much a supportive background as possible. It's strongly in the interest, I think, of the UK, not only to sell education as a product, but also to be of influence through Malaysia's influencers as well, to make sure that connection between the UK and Malaysia remains extremely strong. I think it's in everybody's interest to do that.
Of course, the UK is applying to join the CPTPP. Perhaps you can talk to us more to that effect.
Well, CPTPP is a fantastic opportunity for the UK. The UK joining is a fantastic opportunity for the existing 11 CPTPP members. We're delighted that Malaysia itself ratified in September of last year. But the UK joining CPTPP changes the nature of CPTPP from being essentially a Pacific Rim trading group to being a global trading group. Overnight, the GDP of CPTPP would go from about 12.2% of global GDP to about 15.4%. So it really starts to grow its critical mass. And Malaysia's been there right at the beginning in CPTPP, helping set the global trading rules of this new global free trading alliance. That's a great place for Malaysia to be. It's a fantastic thing for the UK to join. The UK joining is great news for Malaysia and the other CPTPP members. So it is a win-win all round. We're looking forward to closing the deal of the UK joining later this year. And to make sure the UK is in really at the latest next year.
The Prime Minister of Malaysia is adamant in terms of growing digital economy, as evident by the creation or the update of the Communications Ministry to become a digital ministry as well. And early on, you were talking about some ideas where you can explore some bilateral improvements in terms of trade and support and growth in this respect. How do you see Malaysia and the UK move forward when it comes to the digital economy?
Well, I think Malaysia is a fantastic place for the digital economy. It's a very tech-literate, digitally savvy, English-speaking population. That's why a lot of UK tech companies are very excited by Malaysia already here. I think more than 100 UK tech companies are already present in Malaysia. I think the support the government is giving here to the tech sector has also been very positive. We look forward to that growing as well. So I think there's fantastic opportunities here. For UK companies and for that whole tech exchange to grow between the UK and Malaysia. My first visit here in 2017, I actually visited the Magic opportunities then and saw for myself some of the more nascent tech startups in Malaysia and it's a great, great sector for Malaysia, a great, great sector for UK investment and for trade exchange.
Another area of interest under this new administration is the climate change effort, and it's crystallized by the climate change ministry. The first time we've ever had such ministry to look into this policy matters at length. And of course, the UK has been quite aggressive in terms of energy transition and climate management. Do you feel that there could be some areas of bilateral improvements when it comes to the UK and Malaysia on climate change?
Well, I launched the UK's own net zero strategy in October 2021 when I was the Minister for Climate Change at the time. So I think it's a really exciting chance for the UK and Malaysia to work closely together. And to the Malaysia going net zero by 2050, the same date as the UK. I think there's a lot that we can do together on renewable energy. I think is going to be a fantastic opportunity here. And making sure that the UK can provide support and also dialogue with the Malaysian government on climate change. But I think we're moving in the right direction.
What about investments? Do you feel that there could be an opportunity for British firms to invest in digital economy and climate change activities here in Malaysia?
Definitely. We're already seeing, I mentioned, 100 UK tech companies already here. That could certainly grow. I think on the clean tech side, definitely the UK is right at the forefront of many offers on renewable energy. We've got the world's largest, or the Western world's largest, installed offshore wind capability in the UK. We're very, very good on solar. You know, there's different things here that we could bring to Malaysia to help the Malaysia's own clean energy drive, decarbonized energy drive, a clean tech drive. There's a huge amount we can do together.
Harkening back to your experience as the climate change minister back in the day, what were the challenges that you had to overcome, and what kind of challenges do you foresee this current climate change minister needs to focus on?
Well, I think it's really important to go with the grain of human behaviour. When it comes to climate change, persuade people, incentivize people. I would be more in the market of making low carbon technologies more attractive rather than just banning the old technologies, if you like. So incentivizing people, go with the grain of human behavior. For example, in the UK, when it comes to heat pumps, we're moving away from gas boilers to electric heat pumps. We don't come into people's homes and rip out their gas boilers. We instead incentivize and try and kickstart a market in heat pumps. We give grants for heat pumps. So effectively kind of going with the grain of human behavior, we give people time to make the transition. We recognize, as going back to the boiler point, that the average life of a boiler in the UK, I think, is about 7 years. So give people 7 years to make that transition. Don't tell people they've got to trash something that they bought recently. When it comes to electric vehicles, of course, you won't get people driving an electric vehicle unless your charging infrastructure is in place. So you need to make sure that you incentivize people, make it relatively easy for people, or as easy as possible, to make that change. And bring people in, persuade people rather than cajole them.
Early on, you were talking about marketing legal services in Malaysia, and of course the UK is very strong in services, of course legal as well. There's a lot of similarities when it comes to the laws between our two nations, and of course right now we're looking at only two foreign firms have invested in Malaysia. They are both British. What would be some of the benefits for Malaysia in terms of opening our legal services and legal service market here and as well as in the UK?
Yeah, well, I think there's two benefits. One is, in its own right, the ability to attract in more legal services firms and actually become a bit of a hub for legal services in Southeast Asia, the ASEAN region. That, I think, will be bring big benefit to Malaysia. Obviously, the legal system in Malaysia is very similar to the UK, the actual basis of law. I think making it much simpler, currently there's quite a bureaucratic licensing system to operate in Malaysia. So making it simpler to operate in Malaysia, that is the main benefit, to bring in more legal services, create this regional hub. And that has a knock-on effect into other areas, particularly foreign direct investment. Foreign investors like to see legal firms here because Foreign investors love the rule of law. They love stability in the rule of law, a stable legal background for their investment. And having the big firms here makes it more attractive for big foreign direct investors to come into Malaysia. So I see it both directly, high-paid jobs, high-paid opportunities in legal services by becoming a regional legal services hub. And then secondly, the consequential impact that will be for foreign investment, attracting in bigger firms coming here to invest in Malaysia, provide jobs.
Final question to you, Mr. Hans. Kuala Lumpur is not foreign to you. You've been here a few times, but the last time you were here was in 2017. A lot has changed since then. Just like the UK, we've had a whole roller coaster of prime ministers that we have to go through. Right now, hopefully, we're comfortable with our prime ministers for the time being. Where would be the areas of concern and interest for you personally in your visit this time around? What would be the two or three things that you really want to achieve from this visit in January, in February 2023?
Well, I think three or four things. We the UK is joining CPTPP. We want to maintain that really strong level of Malaysian support for the UK application. As I mentioned, it's a huge opportunity for both countries, for the whole of the CPTPP partnership to take in the UK. It fundamentally really kind of, you know, gives a huge boost to CPTPP as a trading group. Secondly, I'd like to see more going on in terms of more progress on the tech and digital partnership that we talked about, making sure that that moves forward. There's already 100 UK tech companies here, making sure that that environment continues to be really strong. I'm looking forward to meeting ministers from the new government today. That'll be great to talk to them and see how we can upgrade the UK-Malaysia relationship going forward. Do more on the trade side, more trade dialogue, more interaction between the two countries, also officially as well.
Fantastic. I wish you all the best. That was the Right Honourable Greg Hans, the Minister of State for Trade Policy. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Stay tuned and continue to watch us on astro1e.com. Thanks for joining us. We are talking about the trust measurement of how people view things. And of course, joining us in the studio is Arun Menon, who will be talking about the Ipsos Trust Track, talking about how trusted corporations and institutions are, not just in Malaysia, but around the globe as well. Arun, thanks for taking the time to come over to the studio to talk to us about this. What's important about the trust track is that you track it over years. And because of this, the trust index has indeed gone up from 46 to 50, 56, and has remained consistent from 2021 to 2022. I want to know what it means. What does 56 mean, and is it showing more trust or less trust than before?
So thank you, Ibrahim, for having me and Ipsos at the show. So you're rightly so, the trust has improved mostly during the COVID pandemic years, right? And then it kind of has plateaued or stabilized between last year to this year. So what we see from that is that mostly people seems to be, the trust level hasn't changed much at the overall consumers or the general public in Malaysia. What we have seen in increase period is that there's a lot of activation activities during pandemic years from the government side, the institution side, to support a lot of the people. Now we are seeing as a normalization of these things. Okay, that's all good and it's all reflected in the trust. So trust is like a reservoir. You build it up, right? So whenever there's a crisis, you can utilize that trust, right? So then they will give you a benefit of doubt. Okay, this company has helped me at the time when I need it. I will let it go if there is a crisis, right? Now it's kind of plateaued in the sense that people have seen what companies can do, and there is nothing new coming out from the companies as such from what it has been. So they are meeting the expectations that the general public has. Having said that, you would notice that it's not the same all across. At the overall level, it's stable, but there is a huge changes when it comes to private sector and public sector companies.
All right, let's talk about that right now. So as you can see right now on the screen, there's different varying levels of fluctuating trust in the across the sectors, from GLCs to public regulators, FMCG, automotive, media, entertainment, telecom, and financial services. Let's talk about the increase or the decrease in the trust within the sectors.
So what we have seen is that, and it's for some years as such, the government and government-linked companies tends to be stable in Malaysia in terms of trust level, right? So it's almost the same. So the few minor points here and up and down, right? But we have seen two categories. We track around 15 categories and around 125 brands at the overall trust track. And in that 15 categories, we see two categories has gaining on trust level. That's mostly on the FMCG or the consumer good category, and also on the media and entertainment segment. So there's two segments which we see that, you know, huge lift in terms of sector. So though it's overall the kind of stable, but there is movement for specific categories.
And of course, one item that we need to touch on is that some companies are more trusted than others. In this case, EPF and Petronas are the two most trusted brands in the country. Why is that so, you think?
Okay, so EPF and Petronas was the most trusted last year as well. And in case of Petronas, from the time that we've been tracking, it is either in number one and number two at the overall level, right? Mm. So that's also quite different in Malaysia, and oil and, you know, oil company being as the top trusted company, right? It's not the same across the globe. Yeah. That shows the differences that in Malaysia, we attach a lot of personal attachment to emotions to Petronas, right? And EPF at also the time, especially benefited from the last 2 years in the sense that the, you know, the benefit that the general public has got in terms of from the EPF over the period of time, right? So it's also gives the implication that if there anything goes wrong, you know, I have an EPF account which potentially can support me. So that's the, you know, backstory of the EPF. But Petronas has been a brand which has been quite strongly trusted by Malaysia because it's considered as one of the national icons or national jewel, right? So, and it's been there in that position for a long period of time. And they built it over consistently over many years.
What I want to talk about is actually specifically Petronas. I live in the KLCC area, mm-hmm. and you can see Petronas branding everywhere. In fact, I can't turn around without seeing the Petronas brand. And they espouse the fact that they do work in the community and the fact that they are a little bit more environmentally conscious, more than most energy companies. But what I find interesting is that they actually walk the talk, because I was on a boat ride off Kota Kinabalu and off to Pulau Gaya, where, you know, it's quite bad when it comes to the poverty level there. But even at that, you know, place of Pulau Gaya, of Kota Kinabalu, there's a lot of work that Petronas is doing for the communities there, from, you know, serving out notices saying that don't go to the oil rigs, mm-hmm. or the ability for them to actually spend on putting kids off Pulau Gaya into schools. So it's really, and I wasn't even looking for this, right? So as you can see, they are everywhere when it comes to branding and the work that they do, from KL City Centre to KLCC all the way to Pulau Gaya and Kota Kinabalu. But surely this is something that is, you know, needs to be seen by most companies as well. Yep. This is how you build trust. What do you think?
Absolutely. What Petronas that we call is a solid trust, right? So you are aware because it is, you know, it is present in all our life on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You're familiar, and the opinion is favorable about the company, and that's led to a trust level, right? So that's how you build trust over a period of time. And that's what Petronas has done, right? So, and people, beyond the day-to-day, they also are very conscious of the overall contribution of Petronas to the economy. And as you said, the CSR activity, the sustain, it's a way of life for that organization, right? So as you said, that's probably something the other companies can learn from.
One item that I want to explore also is on some brands that we don't normally associate with trust or industries, like, for instance, telecommunication. We always complain of the fact that, you know, internet is slow or drop calls and other stuff like that. But it seems like Maxis is rather trustworthy. They're looking at insurance as well and financial services. Mm. Prudential is one of them. And of course, mobile wallet. Everybody talks about Touch & Go lately, but Touch & Go is also seen as a trustworthy brand. Mm. So how do we marry the pedestrian understanding of how brands work with the trust levels that is seen associated with these brands?
Okay.
Yeah.
So it has to from what is actually driving my trust, right? As that's because there are some reason because of which I will trust the brand. And it's kind of keep changing over a period of time. So there are brands that we associate strongly trusted, right? So if I'm in 2021, 2020, I would consider, I trust a brand because how they are able to manage the crisis. They have strong, capable leadership. So that's kind of helps me into that, you know, trust those brands.
We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss with Ipsos still on their Trust Track survey. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Arun Menon. Joining me in the studio, he is, of course, the Managing Director of Ipsos. We're talking about Ipsos's trust survey. There's also this whole element of measuring national sentiment after the new government formation. And the question that was posed to the public was that, would you say things in this country are heading in the right direction? It seems like after GE14, it seems like there's a whole overwhelming idea of post-election euphoria. And of course, this is not seen as much in the GE15 aftermath, I call it. But it's still, you know, both are consistent in the sense that we had a very pessimistic view of the election. When the election has come and passed, it seems like there is a boost in national sentiment. Is this always the case for other countries, for instance, when you measure these trust track survey on national sentiment across elections across many markets? Or is it just one of those peculiar things that Malaysia is facing?
You're right. It is generally seen across the countries after the elections, particularly when there seems to be a change of government. That's where the recently in Brazil, which they have just past the election, you can see that a huge momentum shift in terms of sentiment as well, right? So there's two aspects that we see. Just when we go to the election, as you can see, either in G14 or 15, the scores, whether the country is in the right direction. Only 40% of Malaysians thinks that the country is in the right direction. And then it's kind of boost up in the next, you know, wave onwards, right? So what we see is that when you go to election, there is a lot of uncertainty, unpredictability, what's going to happen. That's also kind of boost down the sentiment a lot more, right? Then when there is a change of government, okay, then there is, as you said, a euphoria at sentiment to say that I'm going to send in the right direction. So we asked two questions. What do you see the overall outlook of the next year, right, as 2023, as we span out? And what is your immediate outlook? So the immediate outlook, as you can see, the economic confidence and sentiment has picked up quite a bit, right? But the overall outlook, it's still slightly pessimistic for Malaysia and across the globe. Right, because they see that, you know, interest rates are going to go up. Everybody thinks that it's going to go up, right? They see there's going to be more because across the world there is, you know, tech companies are laying off and there is this, you know, unemployment issues, which is, you know, generally prevalent. So immediately we see a lot of positive, you know, sentiment, which is post-election and everything, new government, new policies and everything. We have seen till January. And the same thing as well. Last election after GE15, after a couple of months, it started fading down.
And speaking of which, so we're already talking about this particular graphics here, a mix of concerns replacing singular COVID-19 focus. You were measuring three items: COVID-19, political corruption, and of course inflation, or I guess the economy. And it is steadily showing the rise of the percentages of people worried about inflation. And is it fair to say also the economy as well, or it's specifically on inflation?
Primarily on the inflation part. So what we have seen is that sometimes from September 2021, that inflation has been creeping up as one of the main concerns, right? You can see it start up now around 43% are concerned about inflation. Very similar globally, also around 40% of the people that we survey as concerned about inflation. So it's very much the case, and people are expecting the prices will continue to rise.
But what is also interesting is the top 10 concerns of Malaysians versus global country average. We're talking about inflation, 40% global country average, Malaysia about 43%. But what is different from Malaysia versus global country average is that corruption is very high in terms of the concerns. Actually, I'm one of them. I'm one of these guys in terms of worried about corruption. And of course, COVID-19. Is this because I saw the graphics before? There was an uptick in terms of the worrisome of COVID-19. It was dropping steadily over the past few months. Is this because of the reopening of China?
Absolutely, you're on the dot on that one. Whenever that, you know, that's so Malaysia tends to be highly sensitive to COVID-19 compared to the rest of the world, what we have generally tracked. So when there is any surge, like for example, when China is opening, a lot of communication around, you know, the issues in China with COVID, then definitely that uptick. But financial political corruption, as you can see, is that a constant line which has been underplayed as a worry of every Malaysian. So almost around 40 to 50% Malaysians are always concerned about it. So we've been tracking it for the last 4 to 5 years. It was always there as one underlying worry or a concern for Malaysians.
And this is the graphics that I wanna talk about. The economic sentiment hike in post-election climate. It is consistent across the kind of other surveys that we are reading. The current status and the economy in 6 months both are showing worrisome elevation of elevated levels of worrisome amongst Malaysians. And this is indeed the number one topic of the day in terms of what people are worried about today. Do you feel that the economy is the worry on economics is still going to be there for months to come until and unless we see some sort of resolution coming in from, say, the government or some companies actually addressing this?
So the current sentiment, which is positive, right, the economy sentiment post-election immediately as such, right?
Yeah.
That's partly because of there is a general sentiment that the ringgit is strengthened over the last few months across the US dollars. There's a lot of positive news immediately after the elections, right? Whether, as you rightly said, whether we can actually maintain this stream of positive news, and that's something which is going to help us, you know, to continue to go the economic sentiment up, right? And there's going to be a divergence what we see across the Malaysia and the wider Asian region compared to Europe and the US, right? The same individual in US and Europe is much, much more concerned about the economy and the recession and everything. Probably Malaysia is not as much, or the Southeast Asian countries are not as much worried about that. But still, we need a constant, steady stream of, you know, real planning and activation from the government side, and also a lot of positive good news which helps the people to keep up that thing. Because with the sentiment, also spending. If I'm positive, then I would rather go buy this product. I'm more confident to, you know, invest in a property or buy a car, right? So sentiment is always linked to the purchase intention of people, and it's reflected in the business in general.
Okay, one more short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a bit more with Arun Menon of Ipsos.